ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय चरं क्वचित् कंटक शाखारं गिरिः चरं क्वचित् कंटक शाखारं गिरिः चलं क्वचित् कंटक शाखारं गिरिः नागरुरुक्षुर् विमना इवस्ते नागरुरुक्षुर् विमना इवस्ते नागरुरुक्षुर् विमना इवस्ते चलं क्वचित् कंटक शाखारं गिरिः नागरुरुक्षुर् विमना इवस्ते पदे पदे व्यन्तरा वाणिनार्जिता पदे पदे व्यन्तरा वाणिनार्जिता पदे पदे व्यन्तरवाणी नार्जिता कौटुम्बिका क्रुध्यति वै जनाया कौटुम्बिका क्रुध्यति वै जनाया कौटुम्बिका क्रुध्यति वै जनाया पदे पदे व्यंतरा वाणी नार्जिता कुटुम्बिका क्रुध्यति वै जनाया चलं क्वचित् कंटक शाखारं गिरिः नागरुरुक्षुर् विमना इवस्ते पदे पदे व्यंतरा वाणी नार्जिता कौटुम्बिका क्रुध्यति वै जनाया चलं क्वचित् कंटक शाखारं गिरिः नागरुरुक्षुर् विमना इवस्ते पदे पदे व्यंतरा वाणी नार्जिता कौटुम्बिका क्रुध्यति वै जनाया Sarkara, pierced by thorns and small stones. Angri, whose feet. Naga, the hills. Aruruksu, one desiring to climb. Vimana, disappointed. Eva, like. Aste, becomes. Pade pade, step by step. Abhyantara, within the abdomen. Vanina, adita, being fatigued and aggrieved. Kotumbika, a person living with his family members. Krudyati, becomes angry. Vai, certainly. Janaya, at the family members. Translation. Sometimes the merchant in the forest wants to climb the hills and mountains, but due to insufficient footwear, his feet are pricked by small stone fragments and by thorns on the mountain. Being pricked by them, he becomes very aggrieved. Sometimes a person who is very attached to his family becomes overwhelmed with hunger, and due to his miserable condition, he becomes furious with his family members. Responsively, please. Sometimes the merchant in mountains, but due to insufficient footwear, his feet are pricked by small stone fragments and by thorns on the mountain. Being pricked by them, he becomes very aggrieved. Sometimes a person who is very attached to his family becomes overwhelmed with hunger, and due to his miserable condition, he becomes furious with his family members. The ambitious conditioned soul wants to be very happy in this material world with his family, but he is compared to a traveler in the forest who desires to climb a hill full of thorns and small stones. As stated in the previous verse, the happiness derived from society, friendship and love is like a drop of water in the scorching heat of the desert. One may want to become very great and powerful in society, but this is like attempting to climb a hill full of thorns. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur compares one's family to high mountains. Becoming happy in their association is like a hungry man's endeavouring to climb a mountain full of thorns. Almost 99.9% of the population is unhappy in family life. Despite all the attempts being made to satisfy the family members, in the Western countries, due to the dissatisfaction of the family members, there is actually no family life. There are many cases of divorce, and out of dissatisfaction, the children leave the protection of their parents. Especially in this age of Kali, family life is being reduced. Everyone is becoming self-centered because that is the law of nature. Even if one has sufficient money to maintain a family, the situation is such that no one is happy in family life. Consequently, according to the Varnashram institution, one has to retire from family life in middle age. Pancha Shodvam Vanam Drajet. One should voluntarily retire from family life at the age of 50 and go to Vrindavan or a forest. This is recommended by Srila Prahlad Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam 755. Tasadu manye suravarya dehinam sadasa mukvina diyam asagrahat hipatma patam griham andakupam vanam gato yadharim asrayata. There is no benefit in transferring from one forest to another. One must go to the Vrindavan forest and take shelter of Govinda. That will make one happy. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness is therefore constructing a Krishna Balaram temple to invite its members as well as outsiders to come and live peacefully in a spiritual atmosphere. That will help one become elevated to the transcendental world and return back home, back to Godhead. Another sentence in this verse is very significant. Katumbika Krudyati Vaijanaya. When one's mind is disturbed in so many ways, he satisfies himself by becoming angry with his poor wife and children. The wife and children are naturally dependent on the father, but the father, being unable to maintain the family properly, becomes mentally distressed and therefore chastises the family members unnecessarily. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.2.8, Achinna dhara dravina yasanti giri kananam. Being disgusted with family life, one separates from the family by divorce or some other means. If one has to separate, why not separate willingly? Systematic separation is better than forced separation. Forced separation cannot make anyone happy, but by mutual consent or by the Vedic arrangement, one must separate from his family affairs at a certain age and fully depend on Krishna. This makes one's life successful. So this chapter that we're currently reading speaks extensively about the joys of living in the material world and how the living entity, despite so many efforts to enjoy, ultimately winds up experiencing some kind of suffering. And what we see is that the living entity has some awareness of the difficult situation, has some awareness of suffering, therefore tries to make some adjustment in order to make life more pleasurable. But we see that it doesn't actually work, and what actually happens is that they create more suffering. And I can think of a very prominent and an example that we all deal with practically every day is the motor car. You know, a person wanted to get from one point to another quicker, and so they decided to build a motor car because they figured this would be faster. But then all you have to do is just look statistically at what one needs to do, or the suffering that people go through in order to have a motor car. We need to build so much infrastructure, so many roads, we have to have, you know, oil rigs drilling holes in the sea and spilling, you know, huge oil slicks and etc., etc. And then we have road accidents. A statistic you might be interested to know is that India has the third highest road toll in the world. More than 100,000 people every year are killed on the roads there. And it's just like, you know, a huge amount of suffering comes just from this one thing, to try to get from here to there quicker. You know? And actually, interestingly enough, this is a statistic I heard maybe about 10 years, 15 years ago in London. Back in the days of the horse and chariot, the average speed of traffic from one side of London to the other was 12 kilometres an hour. And now we have cars that can travel, you know, in excess of 200 kilometres an hour. Still, we find that the average speed of traffic from one side of London to the other is still 12 kilometres an hour. So what was the point, you know? They made all this endeavour, all this suffering we have to go through because of an automobile, and still it doesn't actually help us. And we understand that actually it's just increasing our passion, because we see the way that people drive, especially as we're here in India, we see the way that people drive in India. It's actually frightful, the way they go down the road. I mean, you know, some of the cars are just really scary. But the point that is being made here by Rahugana by Judd Barrett from Aotearoa, is that the living atheist trying to make so many adjustments to improve his life in this material world, he finds one type of suffering, therefore he does something to overcome that type of suffering, and something else happens that makes, you know, just increases the suffering. And it's kind of this verse in purport, and it's interesting because it's mostly talking about grihastha life and how that ultimately the ideal situation for a grihastha is to retire from family life. And I was reflecting on this when I was asked to speak on this verse, and I sort of read it and thought, oh no, not a verse like this. It's either you get different extremes, right? I guess, with this sort of verses. Someone might give a very fanatical verse and say, yeah, how we should, you know, it's all Maya, we should give it all up and things like that. But, I mean, I don't see it like that. I just see how that, you know, every opportunity that's, you know, everything that's presented to us, sometimes it may seem as reverses, sometimes it may seem as you know, gains. I feel that if I can take every opportunity that comes to me as an opportunity to serve Krishna, then this is going to be for my betterment. And the same with family life. I see this as an opportunity for me to become more Krishna conscious, an opportunity for me to serve Krishna more effectively. Because, you know, the reason I got involved in family life is that I wasn't able to maintain as a celibate, so therefore Krishna made an arrangement for me to meet, you know, a nice Krishna conscious lady. I'm now in a family life. And, you know, I find that through the Grihastha Ashram, it's helped me to evolve so much as a person. And therefore, if we can utilize whatever the situation, because we see here what Judd Barrett's talking about is that the materialist, whatever situation he comes upon, or materialist comes upon in their life, they try to exploit that situation. They try to look at how can I enjoy from this situation? How can I increase my worldly possessions? How can I, you know, control this? You know, Ishwara Hambhogi Siva Hambhavam Sapi, Krishna explains in the Gita. This is the nature of the materialistic, or as Krishna says, the demoniac person, is always trying to be the controller and the enjoyer in every situation. And as a result, this just simply perpetuates their suffering. They think they're trying to enjoy, but because they're trying to exploit the resources of material nature, as Krishna explains in the Gita, ultimately they become controlled by material nature. But in Krishna consciousness, if we can see that all these things that come to us are simply an opportunity to engage further in Krishna service, an opportunity to make advancement in Krishna service, then ultimately we will become free from the attachment. Because the reason we're going through any situation in material life is because the very reason we're here in this world is because of our material attachments, whatever they may be. And everyone's attachments are different. It's not that we all have the same attachments. But whatever attachments we have, this is what's created the situation I'm now experiencing. Unless, of course, it is we're pure devotees and we're simply descended here to spread Krishna consciousness. My limited experience is that's not so common. There's not that many people who descend from the spiritual world to, you know, distribute mercy to the fallen conditioned souls. So generally speaking, for most of us, and especially for myself, I see that, you know, I'm here because of my material desires. So then if I can use these opportunities that come, whatever situation it may be, to try to surrender more to Krishna, to try to see the Krishna conscious angle in things, then it's going to help me to grow more and more as a devotee. And there's a few interesting examples used in this chapter. I was just reading a few verses before. I think it's the sixth verse that talks about how, you know, one's feeling the heat. And it's kind of nice because when you read the Bhagavatam, you can see so many connections or examples, at least I experienced that in my own life, where similar things have happened to me. I think it was two or three verses before where it talks about how on a hot day, you know, you want to go swim in the river, and you jump into the river, and the river's very shallow. I remember what we used to call travelling Sangatan nowadays has got a different connotation. We're out selling paintings in central West Queensland. Anyone who's ever been to that part of Australia knows it gets really, really hot. It gets, you know, easily up into the 50s. And, you know, it's not uncommon, and the sun
but the sky just goes like a copper red from the heat sometimes. It just gets so hot. And so we were out selling paintings. We stopped for lunch, and we found this weir or a dam. And we thought, oh, this would be nice. We'll have a swim before lunch. So we got into our dumpsters, and we're getting ready to go for a swim. And then I wasn't sure how deep was it, so I said to my friend who was with me, I said, why don't you test the water to see how deep it is? I'm a little bit sort of timid with things like that. So we just jumped in. We dove in head first. And the water was, it was like, we were standing on the concrete dam, and there was the wall behind, we didn't see it, but there was a wall behind the dam, and it had 2 inches of water over it. So he just dove in and just bang, landed on the concrete. So when I read this purport, and he wound up with cuts all over him, and it was quite painful for him. When I read this verse before, it just sort of helped me to see that, here we were in this situation. And of course that spoiled the whole thing. We didn't go swimming after that. We weren't sort of so much interested in swimming. But it kind of just helps me to connect with, every time, practically speaking, that I've tried to make some adjustment to what I perceive as suffering, then it just actually exacerbates the situation and I experience more suffering. But if and this is something I struggle with personally, if I can take all these situations which are presented and try to engage them in Krishna's service, then, I'm going to be a better person, a better devotee for it. And there's many different examples. Practically in every verse that I've read here through this chapter, I can see a similar situations happen in my own life. So the Bhagavatam is very interesting because it's like a living scripture. It's like talking to us personally. When we read the Bhagavatam, I think it's very handy if we can actually try to see how this is talking to me directly, not that it's just, oh, this is for everyone else, like when we hear all these different situations about how we are experiencing or how the living entity is experiencing difficulty in this world, rather than being, somewhat removed from it, just try to connect with it. And just like with the process of Krishna consciousness, I had an experience today. I was going upstairs to get ready to give class, and then I was just thinking, when I was in front of Radha Madhava, I like it giving class back in the temple where I live because I can give class in front of the deities, whereas you go upstairs and just was in a room with devotees. So then I got there, I sit there, I'm waiting, I notice there's a Bengali person on the board, and I thought, oh, they want me to give class in Bengali today. And Gaurakamipa came over and said, oh, class is downstairs. Okay. So Krishna, just from things like that, I can see that it's a dynamic process. It's not, something that's static and we just like, we go through the motions in the hope one day we become Krishna conscious. But actually, if we're open to the perceptions, then every step of our lives, every single day, we can see how the Lord is acting in our lives in big ways and in small ways to help us to come closer to Him. And then I remember some years ago reading the Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur's purports when I was living in Melbourne. They were giving class in the 10th canto, so I was reading the Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur's purports in relation to the pastimes of the 10th canto. And he was explaining how all these different things that Krishna was doing in Vrindavan, all these different pastimes he was performing, was simply for the purpose of increasing the residents of Vrindavan's affection for him. So in the same way, Krishna is doing, I see that in my life, and I see in so many devotees' lives, Krishna is acting in ways to try to increase our affection for us, even though sometimes we may not see it, that it's happening. And what I often find happens is like I get caught up in the day-to-day activities and I just don't see all that stuff, that's going on. But if I allow myself to be open to it, then I do see in so many ways how Krishna is acting. And for the one who's in conditioned life, and Prabhupada mentions this in one of the later purports, how they're just so caught up in their lives, they just forget, the whole transcendental side of things and just get caught up in trying to, establish themselves in the world. And even here, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur talks about in this purport how the hills and mountains the jiva is climbing, these represent the sons and daughters, and he's trying to get his sons and daughters married. And this becomes a big anxiety for him, becomes very sort of concerned that, I've got to find my son a good wife or my daughter a good husband and make sure they're taken care of him. And just gets so caught up in all this type of stuff that actually forgets the higher nature of the soul, forgets the you know, what the goal of life. Actually, oftentimes, don't even know what the goal of life is, as it's explained in the seventh canto. They don't actually aware of what the whole higher goal of life. And later on, in the same chapter, it mentions, that, you know, because they have this concept that sense gratification is the aim of life, it says, you know, not by their own endeavor, by the help of others, or by a combination of either of those, can they actually come to this understanding that the goal of life is to take shelter of Krishna. So because of material endeavors, become so absorbed in their life and become so sort of focused on just trying to, you know, improve their situation. And in the ultimate issue, the poor unfortunate souls, they actually don't improve anything. They're actually making their life more difficult. But in devotional service, we have this opportunity to see through that, you know, it's just like, you know, it's kind of nice, again, because the analogies that Prabhupada often uses, you see here in India very clearly. Like in the morning, the last few weeks, we've had these fogs every morning. It's starting to clear now, but you can see as the sun comes up, it gets to one point that you can start to see the sun through the fog, and the fog dissipates. So in the same world, in the same way, in this material world, when people are endeavoring for material life, and the same for us as devotees, when we're endeavoring to try to improve ourselves materially, this is like, it just like clouds our vision of the reality. It's just like a fog. But when it says Krishna Surya Samamaya Hayandakar, when the sun of Krishna arises in our heart, then this darkness of Maya, or the mist, it just dissipates like the fog in the morning when the sun rises. So as long as we're endeavoring to improve ourselves material, as Kunti says, is we cannot actually understand Krishna. Krishna doesn't make himself available to us. But as we endeavor more and more in Krishna consciousness, we become more and more open to perceiving Krishna. And as Prabhupada explained, you know, I think actually Prabhupada's father explained that, you know, for every step we take towards Krishna, Krishna takes 10 steps towards us. So, you know, if we actively take steps towards Krishna, then Krishna will make the effort to reveal himself to us when we become qualified. So, and this is, you know, we see when we get towards the end of this chapter, and maybe in about the last 10 verses, Rahugana. And it's interesting because in one of the purports in the beginning, I think it's the first verse actually, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he used a very interesting analogy. He said by the statements there in the first verse that Jad Bharat has put Rahugana on the horse of renunciation. So by the descriptions he's giving here in these verses, he's showing very graphically to him, using analogies, and then in the next verse he explains the next chapter, sorry, he explains the analogies a little bit more clearly. But through these, and we see this is quite a common ploy in the Bhagavatam. We see that Narad Muni often does the same thing with Prachanabahi. This whole thing, the story of Prachanabahi Shop, this whole thing was analogous story to try and help Prachanabahi to become detached from his family life. And then he used all these analogies, and then later on he explained to him what the depth of the analogy was. And as a result, he became detached. And we see the same here with Rahugana. He's gone through this, you know, he's heard this description from Jad Bharat about the condition of living anything in the world. And at some point he actually gets the point. And then he actually says, oh, thank you, you've actually opened my eyes, and now I actually see my difficult situation. And so it's the same, I think it's the same, for, at least in my experience, it's the same for all of us, is that, you know, at some point the lights go on and we actually realize that what I'm doing is not actually, you know, the right way. I really need to focus in on my Krishna consciousness. And you know, all these like little things we've been doing which we didn't think were so important have actually been distracting us from the main goal of life. So the point here and the point that I see, you know, all throughout, you know, Srila Prabhupada's books is to, you know, we need to focus more and more. It's like, you know, constantly we have to turn up the heat on our own practice of Krishna consciousness, so we're constantly trying to improve. Never finding a comfort zone in Krishna consciousness. Never just relaxing and think, oh, now I've got to a certain point, I'm okay with this. Because this is, It's described elsewhere in the Bhagavatam. This is like a well that's got, you know, when I think it's in the 10th canto actually, describes how when the, during the summer season, when everything grows very rapidly, then the weeds that grow over the well and you can't actually see them, you can be walking through the forest. Well, something that happens here in Calcutta actually is when it floods, is because, I'm not sure, I don't think it happens so much these days, but it used to happen when I first started coming to India, was people would steal the manhole covers and sell them for scrap because they're very poor. So when it flooded, people would be walking down the street and they'd actually just disappear down a manhole. And the water's flowing so fast underneath, they just get sucked away and they're dead. You know? So in the same way, it describes in the Bhagavatam how, when the grass grows over the well and you're just wandering through the forest, you don't know this well, they just fall down the well. So that's what it's like. It's like if we take this sort of relaxed attitude, this comfort zone, then very easily we can become deluded and covered over, and actually we don't realize it until it's too late. So these sections in the Bhagavatam are very interesting because they're helping me to sort of realize my condition, well, somewhat realize my condition in this world, and encouraging me to become more and more focused in Krishna consciousness. And you know, this is why, you know, these even though I feel challenged by these sections in the Bhagavatam, I feel it's really important to study it and also speak on these sections because it helps us to realize more our condition in this world. So I'll finish there. Is there any questions at all?
Prabhupada mentioned in the paper that one should go to Vrindavan forest and attend perfection. So is Vrindavan forest the only place to attend perfection? Devotional service. Can you comment on that?
Did everyone hear what Prabhu said? In the purport, Prabhupada mentions that you should go to Vrindavan forest to attain perfection. And is Vrindavan forest the only place we can attain perfection? You could see this in two different ways. You could see this literally, or you could see this analogously. I choose to see it analogously. Because if one has the right consciousness, you can achieve perfection anywhere. You can achieve it here in Mayapur, you can achieve it in the West. Vrindavan is a very conducive place to Krishna consciousness, no doubt. But if one has the appropriate consciousness, it's just like, you know, it mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the five most potent processes of devotional service. So one of them, it says, is to reside in a holy place. But that doesn't necessarily mean that everyone should just leave wherever they're living and go live in Vrindavan and Mayapur. Then that would be the end of the preaching in the Western countries, or just around the world, that would be the end of the preaching. No, the idea is to make your home, to make wherever you live, to make that Vrindavan. And sometimes, you know, when you visit devotees' houses or devotees' rooms, whatever, you see, you know, they've got pictures of the Dham, they've got pictures of deities, the whole house is just decorated. Well, not decorated, but, you know, the Lord is present there in so many different ways. And in that way, they're trying to make their little place where they live, as much as they can, make it Vrindavan. And also, not just that, but also that, you know, what goes on in the home. Not just we put these pictures up on the wall and we do all sorts of nonsense, but that you know, what goes on in the home is also Krishna conscious. Then wherever we're living, if that's our practice, is that whatever we're doing is we're trying to focus on Krishna, then anywhere you go, it is a suitable place for liberation. It's not limited just to one particular place in the world. It's what's going on inside that matters. Microphone back there, please.
The verse gives us a lot of information about the perils of household life. how the poor householder, he's working very hard, and due to frustration, he gets angry with his wife and children, and also, in the end, there is no satisfaction because the children get upset with you, the wife gets upset with you. We tend to not really take these purports to heart in that we are continuing to enter householder life, and I think not really believing that it's going to happen to us, just like deep down inside, we don't really have a full realization that death is coming to us. So also in the purport, Prabhupada was talking about retiring at the age of 50, and I'm wondering also, besides not really believing what the purport is saying about how householder life is quite a botheration, actually. You're thinking you're going to enter for happiness, but you're not going to find it. And in the same way, Prabhupada talks about giving up householder life at a certain age. But are we also guilty that we're believing that that's not really meant for us also, that we have to make ourselves give up our householder life at a certain age and take on a different, you know, lifestyle of more preaching, I guess. Give it up. Because we're not giving it up.
Yeah, again, from my understanding, the real concern, I mean, it doesn't matter what situation we find ourselves, whether it's a vanaprastha, grihastha, sannyas, whatever, brahmachari, it's what we do with the facilities we have. You know, if we're, and you know, in ISKCON, we've seen this so many times, that someone's in the so-called renounce order of life, and they use that as an avenue for sense gratification. Then it brings about their downfall sooner or later. And it's the same for someone in grihastha life. If they're using that ashram as a vehicle for sense gratification, then it is seriously a problem. But it doesn't matter what situation we find ourselves in. If we're using that as a vehicle for sense gratification, then we've got a problem. Whereas if we're using whatever situation we find ourselves in life to cultivate renunciation from enjoying this, renunciation means giving up this idea of being the controller. Because actually Krishna's the only controller. Ekarisha Krishna Arsabhya Britta. So if we actively cultivate that I'm not the controller, Krishna's the controller, then whatever situation we find ourselves in life, it's okay. Because we're understanding that I'm not the enjoyer here, I'm not the controller. But the problem comes is that whatever ashram we find ourselves in, if we try to be the controller and the enjoyer, it's a problem. And as far as, you know, Prabhupada mentions here in the verse, giving up household life at 50, the basic idea is like the first 25 years of your life you're in brahmachari life, then the second 25 years is in grihastha life, the third 25 years is supposed to be moving into renunciation through vanaprastha. So essentially what that means is you're no longer, at that point when you hit 50, you're no longer sort of caught up in this whole thing of trying to develop your empire, you know, build the house, swimming pools, and like, you know, I used to live in Melbourne, and not far from the temple's in a very affluent suburb in Melbourne, one of the more richer suburbs. And just down the road is this area called Brighton, and you just drive down the beach, on the beach, and it's just this competition building bigger and bigger houses and, you know, swimming pools and tennis courts and this whole thing, you know. And most of these people, they're retired. They're in their 50s, 60s, 70s, like that, and they're building these massive houses. And what winds up happening is they become so attached to it that because, you know, the thing is, like, you know, once you hit 50, you've got to start to realize that death is not that far away. It's real, you know, and we're all experiencing that, you know, as we're getting past 50, you know, this thing stops working, I've got these stones, I've got this problem with my digestion, I've got this problem with my back, and, I mean, the list is just like, you know, and not a week goes past where we don't hear about some, you know, dear friend passing away, just like, you know, 3 days ago, Bhima Prasad Prabhu left his body. You know, so it's happening. You know, it's real, and we need to be aware of that. And, you know, anyone who's not aware of it is literally got their head in the sand. A devotee who's not aware of it is walking around with their head in the sand, because, you know, every day we hear about something to remind us of the situation. So the idea is like, once you hit 50, it's like to start to move away from this, you know, the idea of children, the idea of like building up my empire, the idea of trying to enjoy. And as Prabhupada says, you know, you become Vanaprastha, you travel to the holy places. And we see that there's many devotees in ISKCON who set a very good example of this, where you know, they spend most of their time traveling, preaching, and giving good example to younger devotees. And also you see, as you know, I mean, I experience, you know, I'm in my mid-50s now, and you know, it's kind of like, you know, after you've been married for a while and you've been a devotee for a while, it's like the things that seem to bother you so much when you're in your 20s and 30s just don't seem to bother you so much anymore. There's not such this like urgent need to try to solve the problem, because you realize it's just not going to change, and you just put up with it. And so one of the big advantages of having, you know, older devotees traveling, you know, mature, not just old, but mature devotees traveling, is that the younger devotees come to you with their problems. You know, oh, I'm married and I've got this problem and this thing and other, and just, you know, just basically help them to kind of cope with it and just understand that, you know, these problems are only short-lived. You know? So I think it's a very, it's quite a nice system, because, like, you know, as you mature, you actually become an asset to the community, rather than, like, in I know, because, like, my wife is in Australia right now visiting her mother, who's in an old age, you know, like a, what they call an aged care facility. She's 96, maybe 97 this year, I think. 97 in November. And, you know, you go there, because I regularly go and visit her as well. And then you see that most of the people are there is because they're an inconvenience to their family, because they just don't want to care for them, because they don't see they have any value in life. You know, because they're so much caught up in the mode of passion, and they're just a botheration. So let's just put them in a care facility. We go visit them once a week or once a month or whatever, and don't have to worry about them. There's no problem for me. But in devotional service, a lot of it is because the elders have nothing to offer. Really, because you know, they haven't cultivated spiritual life. But in a devotional community, the elders have so much to offer. They're actually the assets of the community. Because then the young people, the ones who are, you know, they're so active doing all these things, because of the influence of passion, this causes, you know, passion ends in distress. This causes a lot of anxiety, distress for them. And my wife and I are always, you know, being approached by younger devotees with burning problems that just, you know, that they have to solve right now, kind of thing. And just, I think the wisdom that comes with age, and just the calming of the modes also, is very, very helpful for younger devotees. So, you know, I don't think, and as Prabhupada's talking here, he talks in the end of the purport about renunciation. Not that it should be forced renunciation, but it should be systematic. It should be an organic development where you just naturally move towards that. What's the point of you know, taking up the renounced order of life if you still, you know, have strong attachment for sex desire? It just becomes, you know, it just becomes a disturbance in society. And as we've seen happen in ISKCON over the years, you know, when senior devotees, they've taken sannyas, they've been gurus and things like that, and they've fallen down, the disruption that causes and how it shakes people's faith. So it's very important that as Prabhupada is saying, it's systematic, but also it's organic, it's natural. It's not that we're taking on something we're not qualified for. I think that's very important. And I didn't bring my glasses, so I can hardly read this. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, a person's suffering comes from his belief that he is the controller. But if a kshatriya or government is not going to control the country, it won't run. My question is how a person can be something in a controlling, well, both in a controlling mode and also in realization that he is not the sole controller. Please enlighten me. I don't know if I can enlighten you, but I can mention that if we look at many, many famous kings in the Srimad Bhagavatam, for instance, Yudhisthira Maharaj, or even we see with Lord Ramachandra when he went, you know, away from the kingdom, and his brother, I think it was Bharat, wasn't it, stayed back in the kingdom, and Bharat wouldn't sit on the throne. He ran the kingdom, but he put the Lord's shoes there. instead. He never actually, even though he's running the kingdom, he never thought he was the controller. Yudhisthira, the same. Even though he ran the kingdom, he never thought he was actually the controller. He actually always thought that Krishna was the controller. So that's the thing. It's like, the problem is in this day and age, you know, I was listening to a class a few days ago, and Prabhupada was talking about it, that, you know, he was talking about, I think it was Nehru in India, who stayed in the position. He was talking about Gandhi also, stayed in the position until death. You know, they're just so attached to the position. These persons, they're attached to controlling. And the thing is, such persons, how can they help people cultivate Krishna consciousness? Because they're thinking they're the body. Whereas a Krishna conscious ruler, he understands to some degree, or maybe fully, if he's a Raja Rishi, that he's not the body, he's a servant of Krishna. And this is the solution, is if the leaders understand that they're servants of Krishna, and that actually Krishna is the controller, then there's no problem with this. And we see the history is there. If you look at you know, even we see Rahugana or Bharat Maharaj or the Pandavas, you know, when they come to their 50s, they give up the kingdom, they renounce the kingdom, and they go to the forest. They head north, and I was listening to a lecture the other day where Prabhupada said north means the Himalayas. Well, actually, no, he said it meant the North Pole. He said they were heading to the North Pole, to the Arctic Circle, which I thought was interesting. But that was there. All the kings did that, all the Krishna conscious kings. Whereas you look at, you know, there's other kings that mentioned in the Shastra who weren't Krishna conscious, like Venu, or Vena, sorry. And, you know, he wasn't willing to give up the kingdom. Kamsa wasn't willing to give up the kingdom. Ravana wasn't willing to give up the kingdom. They held on to death. From the internet, we read and hear daily about these things, but when the real situation comes, then I just fail to implement. How can I try to remember it so they can practice it? From Nam Bhakti Devi Dasi, Mira Road, Mumbai. I have the same problem. Is things happen every day, and my false ego responds to it. But I'm finding that as I endeavor more and more in Krishna consciousness to not act out of the false ego. Just like, because this section is talking about marriage. And I know in the first few years of marriage, whenever something would come up, I would respond out of false ego, and within no time at all, we'd have a disagreement. And now I'm trying, sometimes I'm successful, sometimes not. Now I'm trying just to, you know, take a breath, think about it for a second, and then have a response. And you know, I find both my wife and I, when we do that, we actually have a productive discussion, and we come to a suitable outcome. So in the same way, I think it's like there's no shortcut solution to it. It's just something we have to keep endeavoring to overcome the false ego and act as Krishna's devotee. Always. That's the way I try. Okay. Microphone?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you very much for a wonderful lecture. My question is, what happens is if a person stubbornly or ignorantly stays in the wrong ashram, can that person make still advancement in spiritual life?
If a person stubbornly stays in the wrong ashram, can they make advancement in Krishna consciousness? As long as we're practicing, actively practicing Krishna consciousness, chanting Hare Krishna, you know, seeing the deity, some advancement is going to be there. How rapid that advancement is going to be is largely dependent on how we're giving up material desires. The real issue is material desires. If we hang on to material desires, that's going to slow us down. So whether we're, you know, I mean, generally someone stays in the wrong ashram is because there's some facility the ashram provides, which they kind of enjoy. Whereas someone who's responsible and intelligent will understand, you know, that I'm not in the right ashram, and then, you know, make a decision to move. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there's always opportunity for spiritual advancement wherever you are, as long as we're not offending Vaishnavas, and as long as we're actively trying to give up material desires. And that's the real thing that blocks us, is Vaishnava Aparad. And you know, as it says in the seventh offense, you know, maintaining material attachment, Prabhupada says, is the most grievous offense. If we maintain these material attachments and we're not actually trying to give them up, that's going to block our advancement. And usually one stays in the wrong ashram, you know, if it is the wrong ashram, out of material desire. At least that's my understanding of it. Okay, we should finish then. Samaveta Bhakti Vindiji, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Srila Bhagavatam Ki, Jaini Taiko Premanam Ki.
Yeah.